Okay, good evening, everyone. So there is a great debate on the night of December 24th as to whether people should be learning Torah or not. If you're in the yeshivish world, they say, what's the question? Of course you learn Torah. However, the Hasidim and the mystics have a tradition that to refrain from learning Torah on the night of the 24th. So all kinds of reasons for it. One reason is if you had to go to learn Torah, you'd be going out into the street. And generally speaking, if a Jew went on the street on the 24th of December in a good Christian country in Europe, he'd probably get killed. So therefore, and the only way they could study Torah is when they went to the Beis Medrash. So they just didn't learn Torah because they couldn't go to the Beis Medrash. That's from a purely practical reason. On the other hand, there's all kinds of mystical reasons that are saying that it is a very spiritually negative night, and therefore we don't do things that could, so to speak, be taken away and put to the wrong side of spirituality. And it could be that the Torah learning that one studies could go and assist the sides of evil. Therefore, we don't do it. So there's a debate on the issue. Whatever you do, as long as you're L'shem Shemayim. So I figured, I really didn't want to do the topic of Gilgal, and you'll see why at the end of the hour and a quarter. You'll see why. But so it's like learning Torah, but not learning Torah, so to speak. It's not like learning a page of Gemara, certainly not. It's informative and it's interesting. It's factual, you know, and I wouldn't consider it learning Torah. I'm not minimizing it. And it's an interesting topic. Everybody wants to know about the topic. So let me first just say a caveat on this, that the knowledge of this topic is all in the mystical writing. It's not in the regular standard fare, as we'll see later on. And the mystical writings, it's very hard to understand 100% exactly what they're saying. And there's a lot of conflicting ideas that are stated. And some of the stuff they talk about is way beyond what the average person can understand. So we're going to try to keep it simple. We might, there's so much on the topic, we're just going to go till it's 9:15 and then we'll stop. And I don't plan on doing a part two. I sent out the notes, so if you want to read more, you could read it in the notes. And a number of weeks ago, we discussed this in passing for about 20 minutes or so. So I figured now we'll give you a more thorough discussion. And it'll go in layers, because I don't know how much time we'll have to go through everything. So I'll start with the basics, and as time unfolds, we'll try to get into more detail as much as time allows. And feel free to ask questions. I hope I'll be able to answer it. The first question is, what is this word Gilgul? This is the Hebrew word Gilgul that we loosely translate into reincarnation. So it comes from the word Galgal. Galgal, the Hebrew word Galgal, is a wheel. So wheel turns. So therefore, it's like, so to speak, the person, when they live their one life, and then as a wheel, they return. It turns over and goes back into a second time around. And that's the general notion, that the soul that's in a body, once the person dies, the soul gets reincarnated into another body. And the general idea, and we'll talk much more about this, is that if a person doesn't accomplish what he is meant to accomplish in one's lifetime, you go back and you get another chance, and as often as necessary, to complete the mission that you are supposed to accomplish. And you can be theoretically continuing your Gilgal until you succeed, or if you don't succeed, until Mashiach comes and without your success. An important idea, and this is said by many people in many different ways, Rav Moshe Chaim Lotzato in his Sefer Derech Hashem. And in Derech Hashem, you know, people want to know all the answers to all the theological questions that exist. And what makes Rav Moshe Chaim Lotzato so special is that he has a very defined approach, systematic approach, where it starts with the simplest ideas and builds on that to the next idea and the next idea and the next idea, so that when you want to discuss difficult topics, you can't really discuss it intellectually, and successfully unless you understand all the basics. So, and this is a classic example, because people want to know why bad things happen to good people and why good things happen to bad people. Person has a question, they want an answer right on the spot. So Luzzatto, very systematically goes through pages and pages and pages of explaining the basics of Judaism, what it's all about. Then he gets into this topic, and he offers a number of possible answers to the question, about 7 or 8 different answers to the question. And now this is the conclusion of all this. So that's where we're at. We're at the conclusion of how he explains. Now, just like any astrophysicist, if you ask an astrophysicist, a leaf that falls from the ground, where will it land? The astrophysicist will not be able to tell you where a particular leaf will land, but he can tell you the 27 variables that exist that will impinge on the leaf and determine where it will land. Of course, he won't know in any particular situation which one of those variables is working at the time that the leaf falls. Doesn't take away from his great knowledge of how a leaf would fall, but he can't tell you the particular leaf. Similar thing, we talk about why do certain things happen to people. So Luzzatto is, we'll call us, the spiritual astrophysicist. So he tells us, I can tell you all the factors, and you have to have a prophet to know which factor is applying in a certain person's lifetime. So now he's coming to just about the last idea, and here is how he describes it. He says, there's an important principle in terms of how Hashem supervises this world, and which is arranged by the upper wisdom to increase our likelihood of success. Hashem has it planned out that we should succeed. We should all succeed and eventually all get into Olam Haba. So now, a single soul can come to this world a number of times in different bodies. It will then be able to repair in its current existence what had been damaged in its previous one, or to perfect whatever had not been rectified previously. The soul will then be evaluated after these different Gilgulim, and its judgment will be based on everything which occurred with all of the Gilgulim. It is possible that what occurs to a person that reincarnated will be the result of what his soul did in its previous existence. Therefore, a person, for example, could have been a terrible Russia in a previous existence. So now he needs certain tikkunim, certain corrections to happen. And therefore, the person's life could be very miserable. And that brings atonement for the sins that he has done. And this idea is said over and over, and at the end of the notes I gave you 2 pages of like every major source who talks about this idea, and Luzzatto just says it very simple. And of course, then he gives you the caveat. There are many details, to put it mildly, in the concept of Gilgulim, as to how one is judged in one Gilgul, and how the judgment depends upon previous Gilgulim. The essential point, however, is that everything is true and straight, meaning to say that God knows what he's doing. That's an important thing to understand. He knows what he's doing, and since human beings have free will choice and make many decisions that can be really terrible, stupid decisions, and in spite of our stupidities, Hashem wants us to get into Olam Haba. So we, so to speak, force his hand to come up with all kinds of alternative options to get us into a good place. So the last one that he wants to use is Gilgul. That's the last one he wants to use, as we'll see why. So therefore, you have to realize that whatever Hashem does, he's doing it for our benefit. Whatever he does is based on what's proper and correct. And that should be the overriding concern of why we study the subject and why he does that. So that is an overall concept of what Gilgul is in a general sense. Okay, as the evening unfolds, we'll go deeper and deeper. Okay, now just for sheer curiosity, some of the famous reincarnations that the mystics talk about. The first one is Hevel. Hevel, who was killed by his brother. He didn't live very long, Hevel. He didn't live very long at all. So there was a lot that had to be done that he wasn't able to do. And he has been reincarnated into very many different individuals, which you already see that you have to be able to accomplish the goals. The first one is his brother, Chase. the one that was born 130 years later. Okay, so he was reincarnated into Chase. Chase starts the lineage, really, of all the Semitic people in the world. And then later, that soul even went into Moshe Rabbeinu, which was 2,238 years later. So just from that alone, you could see that one individual can reincarnate many times, and it could go over a very long period of time until people are there to make certain tikkunim in people. And Hevel, who was generally a reserved type of person, was not the outgoing person, not to go and make spiritual initiatives like his brother Cain. And for that, he did not really achieve as much as he was meant to achieve, notwithstanding he got killed prematurely. So when he goes into other people, you see that they have to make the tikkun for that. Such as Moshe Rabbeinu also was a very reserved individual. He wasn't the type of person that by nature would want to be outgoing and go and take an active role in things. Would rather want to just sit and study Torah. So you see that when Hashem tells Moshe, I want you to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. He said, I don't want them. So, like, where's that coming from? It's coming because he's carrying the soul of Hevel. And Hevel's the kind. He wasn't the one who initiated offering animals. He followed Cain. He didn't initiate. So Moshe had to make corrections to the Hevel body, as it were, which he successfully did. Well, okay, so that's one example. Now, we also have a tradition that the Mashiach's not going to come until all the reincarnations of Hevel are complete. That means even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't finish it all by no fault of his own, as we'll see later on. It's not necessarily your fault. And we'll see that mystically, and we know this happens on Shabbos and other times, that Moshe Rabbeinu really reincarnates into every generation to help people from to remove their impurity that they have in their souls. So therefore, really, Moshe Rabbeinu, on a certain level, this is beyond what we can simply explain, reincarnates into many people and ultimately into the body of the Mashiach as it splits into infinite parts. Another example, Cain as well. Cain certainly also didn't succeed in his mission in life for killing his brother. Well, he gets reincarnated a number of times around. Number one, he becomes the Egyptian who gets killed by Moshe Rabbeinu. So you see how everything goes full circle. That Cain kills Hevel. So now, Hevel's soul goes into Moshe. Cain's soul goes into the Egyptian taskmaster. And Moshe kills the Egyptian taskmaster. Again, going against his nature. And he goes and kills him. Okay, so that was part of it. Part of that reincarnation was that Cain has to get killed. Since he killed, he has to get killed. But that isn't the complete rectification of Cain, because Cain had a lot of great talents. Okay? Well, it further gets rectified as it goes into Yisro. Okay? And the day that Yisro converted Cain's soul, after getting one kick at the can, or whatever, comes back into Yisro, who definitely makes a tikkun for that to a certain level. And then it further gets reincarnated into Korach, who later rebels against Moshe Rabbeinu. And again, and Moshe Rabbeinu for a second time deals a blow to the reincarnated Cain figure in getting rid of Korach. There's all kinds of amazing gematrias I don't have time to get into now. Another interesting Gilgal is Terach, who was Avram's father. Okay, who was a chief idol worshiper, and yet Hashem wants Terach's soul to be able to live eternally, so it gets reincarnated through Eov and all the sufferings that Eov went to. So that's some of the famous ones. You look in the Svarim, the mystical books, they go through lots and lots of biblical figures who were reincarnated versions of that. So just so you know, there is this concept, and especially in the Kabbalistic and Hasidic literature, they talk a lot about that. Okay, next point. You could ask questions as you like, although most times you're going to ask, I'm going to say we're going to get to it, but you can try anyway. Now,
Yes, dear.
I have to be nice to her. She gave me supper tonight. Could be. I can't keep track of all of it.
Okay. What was your question?
If Noah was also Moshe, like he was
from him as well. And it could be of many people. Yeah. Okay. Now, why should one learn about Gilboa? Some will tell you not to learn it. For example, Rabbi Victor Miller, Zichron Levracha, who talks a lot about everything. He was a big tzaddik. He passed away close to 20 years ago. He talks a lot about Olam Haba. He talks a lot about Gehenna. He talks about all these things. But in his Sefer Gilgulim, he doesn't talk about it at all. Interestingly enough, he says, as we'll see, it's not in the Gemara, it's not in the Chumash, it's not in the Tanakh, it's only the Kabbalistic works, and he doesn't talk about it. Very, very, very little. But there's a lot of other people who do talk about it. So why should we at least be aware of the concept, can you know pull it out when you're learning a Parsha class, and to know that he was a tikkun of this person? So there's a number of different answers. Number one answer, and probably just as an overview point, is that the most important point in life is personal tikkun. Or rectification, and those have been in our class every week. You understand that's what it is. That's the most important thing. When we talk about tikkun, is that you develop yourself into the person that you were destined to develop yourself, and why Hashem put you in the world. Right? Hashem put you in the world for many purposes, to develop the Jewish personality that you have, and especially do the special, unique mission that you have in this world as well. And nothing else is as important as that. That's the first rule you got to know. How much money you make isn't important. You know, how many Netflix movies you see isn't that important. A lot of things are. The only thing that's really important at the end of the day is, did you do what you were supposed to do in this world from God's perspective, the spiritual perspective? Some may not realize that, but in the day of judgment, it becomes crystal clear to them. And people are unaware of that. And so therefore it could very well be that there are people who live their entire lives not realizing that you're living your life for a certain personal tikkun. And what usually happens, and this is the important point, is that there is no one in this world that does not go through a multitude of spiritually challenging situations in their lives. Okay? And many people just want to either avoid them or fail in them and not make any effort to succeed. And they figure, I don't want to bother with it. And the problem is, well, that could be precisely why you were brought into this world. Wow. Okay? Now, it doesn't mean, you know, you're for one thing alone. It could be for dozens of things. It could be literally dozens, many, many reasons why Hashem puts you in the world to do many different things. And more often than not, it's generally things that you don't want to do. Okay? And therefore, when you say, I don't want to bother with it, I'd rather do something else. So just remember, maybe that's why God put you here. And therefore, if you avoid that, so it could be, it's the same concept over and over. Hashem wants you to work on a particular midah, let's say, whatever, right? So Hashem always has you with people who grate against that midah. And I force you to develop the midah, but you choose not to. So so therefore, someone's making you, you know, you're supposed to be calm and not angry. Work on your anger. And people just get you angry. So what do? If you're a boss at work, you fire them. And you just fire 50, 60, 70 people in the course of your business career instead of maybe not getting so angry and keeping the personnel that you have. Or whatever. So Hashem will keep sending it back at you, and you're going to always try to avoid these things. And then when you get the final movie, and Hashem shows you all 63 times in which Hashem wanted you to develop this and you didn't, then he gives you the little button. I'm exaggerating. Okay, I don't know if there are no buttons in Shemayim. He just said, okay, time to go back and try it again. He goes, oh no, I got to go back again. Yep, you didn't do it. So therefore, the first reason Being aware of the principles of Gilgulim will help us to live more meaningful lives and to achieve personal rectification. Okay? That's it. Just even though you may not know it, well, we'll talk about that, but that's number one, just to be aware of that concept. Okay, reason number two, more from a philosophical point of view, it puts events of history, past and present, personal and national, into perspective. You know, why cataclysmic events occur don't happen out of nothing. Okay, you know, if there's Holocausts or other tragedies, I'm not the one, I'm not going to make any statements about why it happened. I don't want to make any enemies tonight. But Kabbalists will have plenty to say about that. Why certain generations suffered certain terrible punishments, because there are certain Gilgulim that have to be rectified. Okay, so, and that could be from and many perspectives, and people have to learn from past mistakes to prepare for the future. Okay, and as also I said, reason three, it also helps us to better appreciate other people and how they act. It could be that certain people in your life or that behave, you know, strangely or in a unique way, it could be very much they're a Gilgul of somebody else. It's interesting how David HaMelech talks about Gilgulim, and he says, what's the main prerequisite when you learn this topic? And he says the pasuk about, he writes, is Sod Hashem Li Reyov. The secrets of Hashem, and Gilgul is certainly one of the secrets of Hashem, are for those who fear it. Okay? When you're learning a secular subject, you need only information. But when we're dealing with the secrets of God, which are the basis of the topic of Gilgulim, because that's of all the secrets, is the biggest secret, you have to have fear of God. It's meant, you have to have it to study it. It's also meant to bring out more fear of God. So this is not just oh, that's interesting. It's cool. I'd like to hear more about who was a Gilgul of this one and a Gilgul of that one. It's just very fascinating. The study of Gilgul is not to be for your to satiate your fascination addictions. It is to develop Yirah Shamayim. It's to be learnt with fear of God, and it's develop Yirah of God. As the Pella Yoetz writes, when he talks about the belief in Gilgul, it says it's going to cause you to pay attention to Yirah Hashem. And especially if you need it to have Yirah Sa'onish, the fear of consequences. If it's indelibly marked in your mind that if you don't do the job right, you go for a rerun, and the reruns are not pleasant, when you get to certain challenging situations, you're going to have more God-fearing responses based on that. Okay? Okay. Okay. So there's more quotes of what he's giving. And then at the end, he says... as he says, how the Mekubalim revealed to us, interesting point on 17, that most people today are all from previous Gilgulim. There are very few of us walking around today that are right out of the showroom. You know, what do they say? They don't call them used cars anymore. Previously owned, no? Is that what it's called? Previously owned?
That's
so cute. We're pre-owned. So we're not used neshamas. We're pre-lived souls. Okay, so most of us are pre-lived, and he says, back to the Pella Yoetz, who says it's fitting for us to humble our hearts since we are so lacking, and we don't know what we really are and what we are coming to repair as the Arizal. As the Arizal, now when the Arizal lived in the 1500s, you know, you could cheat a little bit. I wouldn't advise it. He would know exactly where you're coming from and would tell you that. Nope. We don't have that anymore, but we have to be humble to know we're here to fix up things we haven't fixed up. Yeah?
Could you be Gilgul for a previous family member? Or
could you could be a Gilgul from anything.
From a goy too?
From, we'll talk about that. Most likely not, but it could possibly. Yeah. It could be from anything. Male, female, you name it. Could be anybody, any part of the world. It totally doesn't matter.
For a second.
What? Whoever wants to.
Is it like we know we're 60,000 neshamot?
600,000.
600,000.
Root souls.
Right.
And a root
so
has lots
are,
of
we
branches.
All, whatever we are now, we're all from there.
Yes.
So that's amazing. So yes. We all used. Recycle.
They have the root souls. Yeah.
Is there a theory that the well of souls is drying up?
The well of soul. Well, I don't understand what you mean by the well of souls is drying up. What do you mean by the question?
That the well of souls is drying up because we're near when Moshiach is.
Well, there's only so many souls that are meant to. Just statistically, it has to be true. It's only 6,000 years to the world, and we only have a couple hundred left. So it's obviously drying up. Okay. Now, the fifth reason is this should help us appreciate the concept, again, Dora Mel says, Ma Rabu Ma Secha Hashem, how great are your works. And Hashem loves us so much that he doesn't want anyone to get lost. You know, he doesn't want to wipe you out because you led a terrible life. So Gilgal is a way for you to get another chance in life, a second chance in life, so no one should get pushed away. Okay, and obviously, as we speak at length over here, this answers, as we said already before, from Lutzato, Ramban, and many, many write about this, explains why the tzaddik suffers in this world while the Russia doesn't. Same idea. The tzaddik could be suffering in this world because of past sins, and the Russia is having lots of good things in this world for past good deeds that a Russia did that we're not yet rewarded totally for. So the Russia gilgals into another Russia and enjoys his life till he gets wiped out. So therefore, that explains, you know, the divine justice over here. Now, there is one other point. That, well, if you're going to say, well, listen, and it's all hidden by God anyway, and it's all God's, you know, incredible, deep understanding, so why don't we just say God knows what he's doing and forget about it and don't talk about it at all? That's one of the questions that the rabbis bring. Just say, okay, we don't understand anything, so why even bother to even think about anything? So they say like this, this is a claim of fools who despise wisdom. We benefit enormously from this learning, which gives us wisdom and understanding of God and his ways. And whether we end up gaining clarity or find that it is hidden from us, this will help our emuna and bitachon Hashem much more than those who never even tried. In other words, discussing the topic, understanding what you can't understand, makes the justice of God more real to us, even though we don't know the specific details of our personal justice. Okay? And if a person studies these topics and studies them at least to a certain degree that we're able to do, it removes a lot of our doubts of God's ability to be fair. And when you learn and you hear that this one's a Gilgal of that one and this one's a Gilgal of that one, and you begin to see how things make sense, even though I don't know anything about me and other people that I know, but this strengthens our emunah in Hashem. Okay. Now, the next thing we want to talk about, just so to be fair and balanced here, is Gilgal an accepted Torah concept? So one of the great rabbis in Yerushalayim in the 1500s, when he discussed the topic of Gilgal, he said there were two basic groups in his time, in the 1500s. You have what were called the philosophers. I'm talking about religious people now, but more from a philosophical perspective that are focusing more on intellect. And they had difficulty with the concept of Gilguling. But there's also a very, very large group who wrote a lot about this topic of Gilgulim. And as we've said, when it discussed the issue of the tzaddik who suffers, that does a lot to talk about that. Now, here's the very important idea that I mentioned before. While there are many hints to Gilgulim, there is nothing explicit in the Torah, Talmud, Medrash, or early statements of Chazal that say Gilgal. It's not there. So that's why, on the one hand, some, you know, may not say that it exists at all. However, there are many hints to this. Again, when we talked about Olam Haba and that kind of stuff, much more explicit things in the Torah, Gemara, and overtly explicit. When we're talking about Gilgal, it's not, but there's lots of hints. For example, in Koheles, when it says Dor Holech V'Dor Ba, a generation goes and a generation comes. Ma Shehoya Hu Sheyia U Ma Shenasa Hu Sheyaseh. what was, is, and what will be, and what happened is what will happen. And they say that's Gilgulim. That's Gilgulim. Now, very important, there's one incredibly important medrash, the Sefer HaBahir. The Sefer HaBahir was written by Reb Nechunya ben Hakana, which is one of the rabbis in the Talmud. What's he famous for? What prayers? Anybody know? You say it every Friday night. Ana b'koach gedulas yemincha. Reb Nechunya ben Hakana. Okay.
It's a beautiful song.
A big, big student in the Reb Shimon bar Yochai world. Okay. He speaks about Gilgulim explicitly. Okay. Now look at all these Rishonim that all talk about Gilgul. These are mainstream Rishonim. Ramban, Orachaim, Rikanti, Rabbeinu Bachaya, Malbim, Marshav, Baal Shem Tov, Vilna Gaon, Or Samech of Eschaim, and even the Stipler Gaon of the last generation. Those are huge heavyweights. And they all talk about the fact that Gilgul exists. It's interesting how Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in his commentary on the Siddur, he uses Gilgul to answer a very famous question. One of the famous questions that is asked is, how can a person, we say the long vidui on Yom Kippur? Okay? Now, I'm sure when you look at that vidui, there's a number of those things that you cannot be saying vidui for, because you did not do that sin. They tell the famous story of a person who asked the Rambam. He asked the Rambam, and he said, "You know, Rabbi, I don't understand. I'm trying to be honest. I've prepared for Yom Kippur, and I've looked at all the viduyim, and I see that a number of them don't apply to me at all. So should I say them? Because after all, God doesn't like liars." So Rambam answers, he says, if we really understood the depths of each and every one of these al-chaits, and to see how deeply it goes, you know, like just for example, although nobody here in this room is a murderer, but you may need to do tshuva for killing, because you know, if you embarrass somebody publicly, it's like you murdered them. No. So that's why you may have to do tshuva for murder, even though you don't think you're a murderer. So Rambam says, you know, you think you didn't sin. If you knew the depths of what every mitzvah naver is all about, he says, you will be clapping al-chait dozens of times for each one. And then he says, and you know what? And even asking me this question is another reason for you to hit another al-chait. That's the Rambam's intellectual response to that question. Well, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, no. He says, you know what we got to do vidui for? Because if I didn't do it in this lifetime, I did in a previous lifetime. And I got to be on guard for that. So that's how he uses that idea to explain that idea. So when you're doing tshuva, even though they say, I know I didn't do this one, so you may not have done it in this lifetime, but do it for the lifetime of your neshama from beforehand and do for that. Fascinating idea. As well, the Chayyotim, a very mainstream posek, he talks about Gilguling, especially when to not say Hashem's name in vain, and explaining certain parts of the Vidui prayer as well. And listen how litvish this goes. Even the Chafetz Chaim speaks about Gilgulim in the Mishnah Brura in one situation where he says there's an idea. Why do we tuck in our tzitzis when we go by a grave? Men should, when you go in a cemetery, you tuck away your tzitzis. And the answer is, why? Because it's showing, it's like you're mocking the dead. Because a dead Jewish man who's buried there can't fulfill the mitzvah tzitzis, and you got your tzitzis dangling along, as if to say, ha ha, I can do the mitzvah, you can't. And it says the Chafetz Chaim, even if the deceased is a little child, a little baby, and who's not chayiv in mitzvahs, so why would he be insulted? Because maybe that baby was a Gilgul of an adult from before, and you're still mocking the Gilgul of the adult. So even the Chafetz Chaim, you don't get more mainstream than the Chafetz Chaim, also talks about the Gilgul. Okay, I'm going to... Okay, we're going to skip the rest. There's just more sources. I'm not going to bother you with all the sources. Okay, let's move on. Okay, now, in general, the overall idea is that Gilgal is a tremendous chesed, as we said. In general, although it's very painful, but it's a great chesed to fix up what you did damage beforehand. And it's a nice hint to this. The word Gilgul, if you look at the gematria of Gilgul, Gimel Lamed, Gimel Vav Lamed, is 72. 72. It's the same gematria as the Hebrew word chesed. Ches Samach Dalet is 72. So obviously Gilgul, by definition, should be something that is a chesed. So that's the overall idea, but it's not something you want to get into. Okay, now, again, to backtrack just a little bit over here, just for those who haven't been with us in the past. Again, so the starting point is to understand that the relationship between the body and the soul, and how we explained on Shabbos, that the essence of the human being is really the soul, and the body is just the physical clothing. We mentioned last Shabbos, the Ramah explains the great wonder that an infinite soul is placed into a finite body, and that's the blessing of Asher Yatzar. And we explained many, many weeks ago from Rav Dessler that the will and desire of a person is his essence, that personality of the person. And even when you die, you still have a lot of those qualities that are with you afterwards. Okay, and we talked about the story of the woman who died, and she was very much into her vanity, and even in the next world, she asked for her comb and things to take care of that. So that's an important idea to realize. Now we're going to take this really deeper now. So I'm just showing you how complex this issue is. It's not so simple just to say, okay, you know, I didn't do good the first time, I'll come back the second time, and that's it. It is like so complex, so I'm only going to share with you a little bit. As they say, either you get it or you don't. And if you don't, you'll say, wow, it was way too hard. And if you get it, you can just appreciate the level of complexity over here. And again, what these mystics write, you know, again, I'm not a bona fide, qualified mystic by the stretch, any stretch of imagination. And there's very limited ideas of what they're really talking about. But clearly we know that a soul has five different aspects of a soul. That we're told in all the teachings. From bottom up, they're called nefesh, ruach, neshama, chayin, yechida. Okay? And even within every level, there's countless levels. There's infinite levels. This is, you know, just like a body. When you go to medical school, you begin to realize it's not just a body. There's like millions of components in the body. You got to understand, in a soul, there's even more than that. So when we say certain terms, we're like trying to oversimplify them, but you can't. It's extremely complex. And what they even mean when they're saying this, it's very complex. So they write like this. When a person is created for the first time, his nefesh enters him to facilitate his bodily functions working properly. You start with your first level of soul, which basically eternalizes all the activities that you do. If you do an action, it should just be finished. It doesn't exist anymore. But what eternalizes it? It's the lowest level of soul that somehow manifests in the blood, and it's involved with our actions. Now, the mystics say if your actions are appropriate, then the next level of soul, the ruach, enters when you become 13. And that helps in your bar mitzvah, then your chayiv and mitzvahs. That is more of the animated personality of the person, their midos, their power of speech, to speak in a proper way. And if you continue to be a good boy or girl, the third level of soul, the neshama, enters when you turn 20, which makes sense, because 20 is when you're really obliged in mitzvahs, that you can be punished by in God's court, etc., etc. Now look what they write. He says, most people barely acquire the lower level of nefesh.
Wow.
Although the potential exists to access all of them. Now that depends on which time around you're coming around. So you're going to continue to reincarnate till you develop every level possible. Okay? For whatever that's worth. Okay? Okay, let's skip around a little bit over here. So if you've developed one level, fine. Then maybe move on to another level, move on to another level, and the different challenges in the different levels. Now, here's where it gets really tricky here. The nefesh, ruach, and neshama, those three levels of person, they all contain 613 parts. That correspond to the 248 limbs and 365 tendons. They're the spiritual components behind that. There's a level of nefesh for these parts, a level of ruach, a level of neshama. And now you can have like unlimited numbers of roots that go all over the place, all kinds of spiritual sparks that may not have been taken care of in one Gilgal have to be fixed up in another Gilgal. And maybe on one level it's been fixed up, on another level not. There's a level of nefesh, a level of ruach, a level of neshama. And now it gets like really interesting. So, for example, so what's the ultimate goal? Is, well, when you rectify all aspects of the soul, nefesh, ruach, and neshama, you're considered the Adam Hashem, the complete person. Then you don't have to reincarnate anymore. Okay? Now, there might be, well, if we have time, you may be reincarnated for other people's benefit, not for your own, which is another topic we'll try to get into. But the general rule is it's impossible for a regular Gilgal, alright, in other words, past one's initial creation, to acquire a nefesh, then a ruach, and finally a neshama, all in the same lifetime. Yeah. Right? That's what he's saying. Now, I'm not sure what that means, because I know we all have aspects that we connect on nefesh, ruach, and neshama. But anyway, he says, except for special procedures, you know, once one has completely rectified his nefesh, okay, he will be able to receive and rectify his ruach once only has died and returned into a new Gilgal. In other words, if you fixed up your nefesh, finished, that was a nice job, you could die, we'll bring you around again, and now you'll work on the next level of the ruach. And when you fix that one up, you'll die, and we'll bring you back to fix up the neshama, etc., etc. What? But I know we have to say, but have nefesh, ruach, and neshama at the same time.
So, we don't do nefesh, ruach.
What?
You just said
Yeah, so that's where it gets difficult to resolve what the mystics are talking about over here.
Hard to understand.
I know.
That's right.
But on certain levels, to do a tikkun on it, right? There's probably superficial understandings of the nefesh, ruach, and neshama that we can relate to, and much deeper ones that we cannot relate to. That's what you have to say. But this explains, Reb Chaim Vital says, this explains why some completely righteous people die very young. Could be, let's say this person comes in, 99% of his nefesh has been rectified. He needs 1% of the nefesh to be rectified, and he gets it done in a few years. Since you can't rectify more than one level in one time around, so the person dies. And then when he comes back again, then he works to work the ruach, etc., etc. Okay? And those are with regular Gilgal. So these are ideas. All I'm saying is it's beyond what we just think a simple thing, just fix up one little thing. We're talking about levels of soul that are just beyond what we can understand, how complex the human soul is. Okay, yeah.
It's hard to understand because when you die young or this kind of thing, then you didn't even have bechira.
Of course, that's for sure. There's no bechira. No. In other words, you're only meant. Okay, I could say it in a simpler way. I could say it in a simple. I'm trying to be more honest here, but I could say it in a simple. I could dumb it down if you like. Not for you, but for everybody. I could dumb it down and say like this. You know, let's say, Avram Avinu. Okay, no one's going to deny he's a big tzaddik, yeah? Who's a big tzaddik? Okay, he lived 175 years. Okay, so machlokas, exactly at what age did he come to the understanding of God? Some say at 3 years old, some at 48, whatever different means. Let's go with the opinion of three. Let's say the opinion of three. Okay, so now, Avraham Avinu comes up to Shemayim. Hashem says, wow, you're unbelievable. You're a mamash tzaddik. You're going right to Amavah. And then I say, wait a minute. How long did he live? 175 years. The first 3 years, he didn't believe in God. So what's going to be with those 3 years? Oh, you're right. Well, it wasn't Avram's fault. You're right. But there's still something missing. Okay, so now we're going to have Avram be a Gilgal to come back for 3 years. Right? So what's going to happen? Now, of course, you're not going to put Avram's Gilgal soul into a man and women who are members of Hell's Angels. Right? I mean, you're probably going to want to look at like the Godel Habir. You're going to look at the biggest tzaddik and tzaddikus in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And like they mamish, they're praying, and they're so holy and so pious. And when they're intimate, they were thinking of the holiest thoughts, right? To bring this amazing soul into the world. And this becomes the soul of Avraham Avinu. And then at 3 years old, the baby dies. So what's that about? The answer is because that was Avraham Avinu's little bit of soul that had to get finished up. And nobody's being blamed or punished. It just had to be that way. And that the family had the privilege of housing a soul of Avraham Avinu. Now, there is no doubt that this happens hundreds of thousands of times throughout Jewish history. All right, where you have these types of situations. So that would be an oversimplification of this more complex nature of what happens over here. I'm just telling you the truth is it's extremely complicated, and our heads aren't big enough to understand the details of it. So I'm making it simple on a simple level, but it's way more complicated than that. Yeah?
Well, and I think the complication is we have the opposite point of view. Somebody leaves Earth too early, and some thought, I'm going to say, higher end, person of higher learning, which is, what did this person do to deserve to leave too early? What did a 3-year-old do? And if somebody lives a long life, oh, they lived such a long life, they must have been here on Earth, oh, they've fulfilled things, and they've done things, and here is almost the exact opposite.
That's right. So that's why you want to study this idea of Gilgal, at least have a much broad. Nobody should ever say when a 2-year-old dies, it's for this reason. If you want to comfort the people, you could suggest that this might have been the reason for it. Okay? There's always a positive way to spin things, and it could very well be. But if otherwise, a person could be devastated and say, I don't understand, what's the purpose of this? So they could take comfort in knowing that that's one of the possibilities, and if the people think they're very righteous, then that's one of the possibilities. And living a long life, it could. It's not necessarily a good omen. Not necessarily. That's all. Yeah, you had a question.
Next step is, when you get married, you get one person that meets.
Okay, we're going to leave marriage for a little bit later. It's another topic. I don't know if we'll get to it, but it's there. Okay, now, here's the famous question. I'm skipping. There's no way we're going to finish this, because on my notes here, it's 46 pages. Okay, I don't know. So, which of the many bodies that the soul inhabited in its various Gilgulim is the one that it will be resurrected with at the end of history during Tchias Ameis?
Wow.
Okay, let's say you're in three bodies. So which one does the soul come back with? The answer is, this is the simple answer. Every body will be resurrected with whichever sparks it was able to repair. Okay? Unless the Gilgal of one particular body did the type of array which is so terrible that would actually block the soul from resurrecting. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And there's another interesting case, in the case of Yibum, but I'm not going to go there there because we don't do it anymore. Let's give an example.
Yibum is not done anymore?
We do not do Yibum anymore. When a man dies without children, and he has a brother, the Torah says the brother's supposed to marry the widow. We don't do that anymore. We do chalitza instead. That long stopped. But that is one of the classic examples of Gilgal. Everybody talks about Gilgal happening there. Because when the man dies and he has no children, that's terrible. So therefore, what happens when the brother marries the sister, the Malbim talks a lot about this, is that clearly the dead brother's soul goes right into the boy. Goes right into the boy. And although we normally never suggest to people which Gilgal is inside of them, by a Yibum, everyone's encouraged to tell the boy, you got your dad's soul. That's for sure. So that's a whole different story. But we don't do that nowadays. But a simple example, so let's say body number one resurrects 40% of the soul. Okay? So and the second time around rectified another 40%. I'm just using this very you know, arbitrarily, and it's much more complicated than this. And the last one was 20%. So therefore, three bodies are going to come back. They'll all coexist. One is nurturing off 40% of the soul, another one off 40%, another one off 20% of the soul, and that's what comes back. Okay? Now, on the other hand, if a person commits a transgression with the punishment is kares, when you're cut off, and we had a long discussion of kares and when it does apply and when it doesn't apply, it's interesting, the Shara Gilgulim, which most of this stuff comes from, says kares does not affect the soul as much as affects the body. The body will be completely destroyed in such a case, while the soul will reincarnate into a new body with which it will be associated during its resurrection. That's the main answer he says about kares.
That's a good answer.
Yes, okay. Okay, now, another fascinating idea which they talk about, and there's many differences between a tzaddik and a rasha. A rasha is given only three gilgulim, four times a crack at it, that's it, to rectify his soul. He gets his one and three more. That's it. If he's like a real Russia, right? And if he's not accomplished by the third Gilgal, he's out. And that soul just goes somewhere else. It just goes, it's nothing to do with that Russia and that conscious reality.
They mix it with something else.
Okay. A tzaddik, now we don't mean a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu tzaddik. We mean a righteous person can have 1,000 Gilgulim to rectify what has to be done. So the question is why? So it's a very interesting answer. Okay, so the answer is, the one who didn't do any rectification at all, the Russia, right, while the other one is has been beginning to rectify. So we're defining a Russia, he didn't do anything to rectify his soul. The tzaddik means he's been trying, he's been doing a few things, he's been doing a number of things, but hasn't finished it off. So if one's in the one is in rectification mode, God says, well, I'll just keep rectifying him. Right? And you can just go on, because you're going to fix it up, right? However, the Russia, he's just going to get worse as it goes. So if after three times he hasn't done much to fix things up, it's better to get rid of him. Okay. That's that idea over there. Now, now a Gilgul can return immediately after burial, as we said. It can come after many years. A Gilgul could even occur after one has had a certain degree of purification in Gehenna. He can then have a little Gehenna and then a little Gilgul afterwards. But you do not go as a Gilgul once you've entered Gan Eden, unless to benefit others. You generally, once you get into Gan Eden, you don't. Now, there's another very fascinating idea that you're not, I'm sure you're not aware of, and this is called an Ibur. What happened to my earth? Ibor, which in English doesn't translate so well. Embedded soul. Okay? Now, what we're talking about here, and this is not a dibbuk. This is a whole new idea that's a fascinating idea to talk about, where somebody who died, and it could very well be, and he's already in Gan Eden. Whatever, he's finished. But God will embed that soul into a host person during the lifetime of the host. We'll call it like a temporary visit.
A contract visit.
Yeah.
What?
I know that.
The word Ibor really comes from the word pregnancy.
Yeah.
So this is not to be confused with Dibbuk that we talked about a couple months ago, where it's a wicked soul is going in there and just tormenting the body. This is a whole different idea, where you have a person, let's say it was a tzaddik. A tzaddik, he already is in Gan Eden. And he's there, and Hashem says, I need a favor. You know, it's the call. It's the call with the ambassador. Can you do us a favor? Okay? And I need you to have your soul embed itself back down on planet Earth for somebody else who needs a favor from you. Okay? And there could be many reasons for this. So this is not to be confused with the Gilgul. The Gilgul is the person's in body A, he dies, he goes into Shemaim, Hashem decides for whatever reason it's not time for Gan Eden, you're going to go back totally and be the one soul in here. Ibur is where there's another person walking around, minding his own business, and God asks the soul, or tells the soul, listen, I'd like you to do us a favor and go into this person who has a body, who has a soul, and I want your soul to be, so to speak, pregnant, you know, to be an additional aspect of soul to this person. Okay, I just want to explain the idea. Do you understand? This is not Gilgal here, but it's an offshoot of Gilgal. Now, it could be to either benefit the host or the guest. So let's discuss. To benefit the host, to help to purify him and bring him to life in Olam Haba. In other words, it could be, now you find this, this is very incredible idea. The Hasidim are into this a lot. And the idea when Hasidim, when they go to their Rebbe's kever, they go to the Rebbe's kever, and they will prostrate themselves on the kever. Okay, now this should be done with only great supervision. You know, like, for example, if you're not a Breslover Chassid, you know, or you're not a Lubavitcher Chassid, or whatever, Ger Chassid, and you're just like a tourist, and you figure, well, let me see what it's like. I would not recommend this.
Stay there.
We're talking about if, like, you're a real Chassid, like you're a seventh generation Lubavitcher or Ger Chassid or Rabbi Nachman or whatever, and you're really into the teaching, and you're really one of the students, and you're of that school of thought. Okay, so they prostrate themselves, and they really want to get close, and to a certain extent, that the soul of that tzaddik enters the person. It enters the person. Now, the person is probably not aware of it, but, and then why? Well, when you got a little bit of that soul is in there, it's going to make you be a lot better and deal with the challenges that you have to deal with. That's talked about a lot, you know, people in terms of schools of thought. You study a lot about a certain tzaddik. You know, let's say you're really a big student of Ramchal,
remember I told
of Lutzaro, and your mom is studying his works, and you're really connected to his works, so Hashem will give you a little bit of Lutzaro's soul, will come into you. Okay, there is such an idea, and it's meant to help you. It's meant to help you, because you can't always do it all on your own. So you need a little bit of help from a spiritual soul above. Okay? So, and it's meant to make the improvement. Now, obviously, you're going to say, I understand. A Rebbe can have a lot of Hasidim. So as we said, souls are very flexible. And you could have a little bit of the soul going into, you know, 10,000 different Hasidim. Okay, you know, that's the Hasidim who are close to their Rebbe, so they want a little bit of that to be embedded inside of them. And the idea is to help it improve. So if the person improves, then the Eber will eventually leave and go back to the upper place. Okay? And in that case, the guest Nefesh will not feel any suffering. As opposed to a Gilgal, where there could be a lot of suffering, when you're coming as a visiting soul, as it were, that's it's an ambassador, as it were. So then that you don't feel any suffering. But sometimes it's to benefit the guest itself. Sometimes, again, when Hashem says he doesn't really have to go through a whole Gilgal, but the guest nefesh will benefit from the help which it is giving to the host with the mitzvah and tikkun of the host. Let's say it's getting more reward by helping the host. It needs a little bit more of its own tikkun by helping somebody else. So this ibur within the host will benefit when the host does mitzvahs. In other words, the guest is meant to help the other one and for his own benefit as well, but won't be harmed if he transgresses. Okay, this ibur to help the guest nefesh will only happen from the host at least 13 years old. And this guest nefesh will feel the yisurim that occurred to the goof of the host exactly as much as nefesh the host person itself does as well, because he has to go. Okay, fine. Now, let's try another one. This is a fascinating one. An example of an eber for the sake of the guest nefesh can be someone who never did a particular mitzvah. Okay, let's say the mitzvah of divorce. Or a non-kohen who was unable to perform the mitzvah unique to kohanim. You can't do every mitzvah, can you? If you're not a kohen, can you do a mitzvah kohen? So, and the guy really wanted to get to do this mitzvah, but I wasn't a kohen. So Hashem says, okay, I'll put you back together, not as a kohen, with a kohen. So when the kohen's doing his avodas, you're going to be doing the avoda with him, right? Or someone who's going through a divorce. So So now you'll be in there when he does the divorce or whatever, and he gets that done as well. Okay, so now, how long does the Ibur stay? So it depends. Sometimes it can stay for the rest of the lifetime of the host, or sometimes it can only be for a certain amount of time till it works. Okay, now here's an interesting one here. Number 80, should a person merit to keep his Ibur until he himself leaves the world? Let's say the Ibur comes in and stays with him till the guy dies. Look at this. And the guest soul is destined for a higher level in Olamaba. The guest really has got a higher place. But Hashem has him stay with the host. So then the guest can elevate the host to the level that the guest is going to.
Wow.
So it's reward miles.
Oh, okay. No, it deserves
so
it.
This person's going to get the higher level because he was with the other one.
Okay.
Now, so therefore, the Eber can really be a very great soul from the past. And that's what we're saying. That's why a little bit of Moshe Rabbeinu comes to us on Shabbos to give us Das. We want to have Das. A very great intellect, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes and gives us this. Now, on the and it can even be, listen to this, even when the tzaddik is alive, some of his soul, while he's alive, will go to another person. Mm-hmm. And that is David and Yonasan, is the example of that, where some of the soul of David, while he was alive, went into Yonasan. This is really soulmates, so to speak. Okay? So now, that's all, so to speak, from the good side. On the other hand, it could be also with Rishoyim. Okay, and the soul of a Rasha can be an Ibur for one of two different reasons as well. If for whatever reason God doesn't want to make him a Gilgul, but he wants him to make an Ibur. So it could be for the sake of the Ibur, meaning if the host person's a tzaddik, will help to rectify this Ibur soul of the Rasha. If the Rasha goes into the tzaddik's body and gets to experience some mitzvahs. And so this already, like, this is like really beyond, where you're talking about big, big tzaddik. You have to realize that Hasidic Rebbes, you should know, were not only Rebbes for the living. They're Rebbes for the dead, and sometimes even more so than for the dead. You know, you see the big lineups of the Hasidim there, with their kvitlich over there. Well, you know, there are many Rebbes, I don't know if nowadays, but certainly in the olden days, we know that for a fact. There are Rebbes that neshamas, you know, after hours, you had the business hours, human beings came. And then really late in the night, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, when everybody's for sure asleep, the Rebbe now is seeing all the souls.
Wow.
The souls that were in Shemayim that are going through all kinds of torment, and they need their tikkuns. So they're going to the Rebbe to get what they need a ticket in the soul world, which is totally unusual from our perspective, to put it least. So sometimes the host person, so let's say the Rasha comes as an Ibur to just be while the tzaddik's doing certain mitzvahs. That's one way of looking at it. Can also be, and this is the famous story with Navos and Achav. Remember, when Achav, the terrible guy, right? He did a lot of terrible things, and one of the bad things was he killed Nabal because he wanted his garden. And then, when Hashem now had to find a way to destroy Achav, he needed somehow Achav to start thinking stupidly. So he'd need another outside source to embed itself with stupid ideas to make bad military decisions so he would be killed. So Hashem goes in heaven, okay, who'd like to volunteer to come down into this guy? So Navos says, I'll volunteer. So he comes into Achav's body and gives Achav stupid ideas and military strategy that caused him to die. So that could be another idea. It could be actually to negatively influence the host person if the host is a Rasha. In this case, the evil guest soul will reinforce the evil of the host until this evil host person is destroyed from the world, as it should be. Okay? Now, here's another example. What if the Ibur, where if one person caused the second one to do an Avera? In our lifetimes, I caused you to do an Avera. Right? So now, the one who actually did the sin may have to come back as a Gilgal to rectify what he did, right? While the one who caused him to do the sin will come back as the Ibur to help him make the rectification of what happened. Do you understand? Because the guy needs to fix it up. So you were the guy the last time around caused him to sin. So now the guy's got to come back because he actually sinned. So he's got to come back. And now the other guy, so you come down and embed yourself in him for a while so that he will fix it up, as it were. Yeah?
But is the deceiver unaware that he's coming in the host person?
The guest or the host?
The deceiver comes down into the host.
So who's unaware?
Is the
host is unaware. The Eber is aware.
The
Eber is aware. Oh, yeah. He knows what's going on. He knows what's going on. Now, look at this point. We have a few more minutes. Now, there is almost no one in the world who can escape Gilgulim. Even great Tzaddikim. You want a pen, dear? And even Talmidei Chachamim. Okay. According to the Shara Gilgulim, everybody goes through some kind of Gilgul, right? Not Tzaddikim are not free from this either, because their Torah shields them from Gehenna. So therefore, Hashem doesn't want them to go in Gehenna. So He'll give them a more modified type of Gilgul to get rid of any Avera that would exist. And that's what it says in Kohelet. There's no Tzaddik in the world who doesn't do something good without sinning. So that's the same thing. So even the tzaddik who really is ready for tremendous amounts of olam haba but still could have done an aveira. And Hashem, let's say, doesn't want him to go through Gehenna, which for the tzaddik would be very bad. So Hashem wants him to have to go through a certain Gilgul to go through that. So it comes out that they will get that, or let's say they didn't get a certain mission accomplished. Even though you're a tzaddik doesn't mean you're infallible to mistakes. And let's say as a tzaddik, you were offered a shidduch and you denied the shidduch. You didn't take the shidduch, and maybe you should have taken the shidduch. You took another shidduch, and now that girl never really, whatever. So Hashem says, you know, really we're wonderful, but we really should have taken that shidduch. So He says, okay, so just go and marry her and give her a good life, and then when you're finished, you come back with that. Okay, now what's fascinating, again, you can't decide how this goes over here. Sometimes the Rishayim don't get Gilgul at all. Sometimes. Again, Hashem makes all these decisions because, you know, Hashem just wants to give them their Gehenna and finish with them. Right? And, you know, being a Gilgul won't even help him. If I send him back down, he's not going to make anything better from it. He's only going to make it worse. I gave him already 80 years. He did pretty bad. And if I'm going to send him back again, it'll just be another 80 years of pretty bad. So you know what? Let's give him the Gehenna, because I've got a very, very small trajectory of Olam Haba to give him. So like, why bother with the Gilgul? So sometimes the Rasha, it depends. It depends. Not all Rashas are created equal. And some Rashas are, as we say, go back as a stone or whatever. But not all Rashas are created equal. But sometimes Hashem says, you know, there's really not much going to happen with this guy. So, and if I send him back, it's going to really help either. So let's just give him his good dose of Gehenna. And it purifies as much as we can. Then this happens a little shtick, a little bit of Olam Haba he's ever going to get. And we get that, we don't have to bother him. While the tzaddik may need many more of those to be able to accomplish that. Okay? And yes, there's a question.
About Gehenom that you're talking about Gehenom.
And I'm going to talk more about that in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but Gehenom is here. The Gehenom is when you are sinning.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
The Gehenom.
You do start here, but it's not anything compared.
It's immediate. It's immediate.
I know. Happened. I know. So when a person gets angry, they say it's like they're in Gehenom here, but it ain't nothing compared to what the real Gehenom is going to be like. The real Gehenom is a million times worse than it. A million times worse. When you're yelling and screaming, you're upset. Okay, you're in Gehenna. You're having a little Gehenna now. But it's nothing compared to what is going to eventually happen. And here is where the Svarim explain what's the existential difference. Remember, every rule has an exception to the rule and different ways to apply it. But the general difference in Gilgul Gehenna is the following. He says that, let's say, if some mitzvahs weren't done properly, so you got to go back and complete them. So that's one type of Gilgul. Alright? But Gehenna is only there to purify. We'll talk more about it in 2 weeks. Not to finish what's lacking. In other words, you do sins, you taint yourself, you create terrible blemishes. right? That Gehenna is for that. To accomplish things you didn't accomplish, that's not what Gehenna is for. Gilgal is mostly for that. So here's a good mashal they give. Let's say a person has terrible sickness on his body, which can be healed either through a long and difficult therapy or through amputation. Okay? Now, Gilgal, right, can take an entire new lifetime or lifetimes, right? But it gives the soul the ability to heal. Gehenna is much faster. It's like an amputation. You understand? You did something wrong, bam! And that's where you're going to get it, and that's where you're going to have it for the rest of your life. And in the next world also, it's going to be the part of your soul that reflects that part of the body, it's going to always show that. But you got amputated. Well, the Gilgal is a much longer term of thing. Okay? Whereas the Reishis Chachma writes, a person may damage a limb to such a degree that if he goes straight to Gehenna, he'll end up losing it and remain spiritually crippled forever. But if you have a Gilgal, it could repair the damage, and therefore you might be crippled in this world, but you're able to fix it up for the next world. So that could be another difference. Okay, and just in passing to end, we did talk about the Dibbuk, and we'll just mention that again. There are some people who are really wicked. They can't even get into Gehenim after they die. And they can't get rid of their averos, and their souls come back, and they have nowhere to go. They got nowhere to go. They're just in the kafakela. They're in the slingshot. They're just going all. They have no resting place at all. They're malachim after them 24/7, trying to just make them terrible. And they could just go wandering forever. And sometimes they find a way to just enter into a body. Just entering a body without anybody's permission, as it were. In other words, a very wicked soul is being tormented, can't go to, it's got nowhere to go, and the angels are just smacking it like crazy. And the only place it has protection, if it enters into somebody's body. The soul enters into a body. But it already has a body. But this is not an Ibor where Hashem is saying, can you do us a favor? This guy's looking for refuge. And when you do that, that usually wreaks havoc with the person's body. And the person is not able to live a normal life because there's another soul. And they can be affected in ways they can't talk. They can hardly breathe and things like this. And they stay there. And that's called dibuk, which comes from the word davak, which means this is the original Klingon.
But we don't hear about that.
I don't know where they got Klingons from, because the book from Davuk is Kling.
How come we don't hear about it anymore?
It happens. It happened. The Chafetz Chaim had it. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman had it. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago the whole story, a long story. But it takes over the body. Now, it doesn't just pick any innocent bystander. It's usually someone who did a particular sin that it deserves that body to come into that. And then you need a whole bunch of mystics to come and, as it were, ostracize the soul from that body. Maybe. It could be that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, that's that for this. If you want, I can do one more week next week.
Yes. No, not next week. In 2 weeks.
Well, in 2 weeks, I'm doing Gehenna.
But I'm not going to be here.
I know, but I just say I'm not going to not do it. So, Amir Tzasev, just show us saw hands. How many people would come next week?
Very little.
Yes. Okay, then maybe not.
Yes.
Okay, maybe we'll leave it for another week.
Good.
We'll leave it for another week. Okay, very good.
Rabbi?